Hello?
Hello, Jack?
Yeah, speaking.
Jack, Peter Donegan, how are you?
Oh, I'm well, how are you doing? Sorry about that. I've had about three people phone me at once.
Oh! you're more popular than me, Jack.
Bit of a hotline.
Wow, okay. Well, that's emanating certain different tones to a gardening podcast, Jack, and more to late-night TV when you come in with the pizza under your oxter. We'll park that joke to one side. We'll hit the intro music.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sod Show Garden Podcast.
It's not another Friday afternoon. It's another episode of the Sod Show Garden Podcast. For anything you hear, at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow.com. My thanks to Adrian Carty, who's on sound today, and the wonderful, ever delightful and extremely good looking, who has not paid me to say that, Andrew Fisher Tomlin of London College of Garden Design, to my left hand side. Jack Dougley, we first met in 2016. I tried to interview you and it never happened, Jack, and I'm delighted 2 years later to eventually get to have this conversation with you. How have you been since we last met in person?
Well, in the last 2 years, yeah, I've been quite busy, really, to be honest. I've quite a few nice little projects on. Yeah, lots of design work, so yeah, keeping busy.
Jack, I want to bring you back a little bit to that Chelsea garden, if I could. It was a purple garden. You were opposite the Royal Hospital building itself, if I remember correctly, just at the back of the floral marquee. Do you remember that one? Can you describe to the listeners at home what that one was?
Yeah, exactly. That was the garden was called the Bermuda Triangle. And essentially it was designed for the Bermuda Tourism Authority. And essentially it was shaped like a volcano, with kind of stunning lighting, very, very contemporary, kind of representing how millions and millions of years ago Bermuda rose out of the sea to form this amazing island in the middle of the Atlantic. And it had plants from Bermuda, very sort of tropical planting. One of their sort of indigenous palms was there as well. And obviously lots of, and it had a mirror at the back to kind of represent the Bermuda Triangle itself and create that illusion where you didn't really know where the garden was. So you got a reflection about five or six times within the mirror of the actual piece. And then at night it came alight as well, because the whole thing would light up, and it had perspex panels which would kind of refract the light, and it almost came as like beacon at Chelsea.
I've got a million things running around in my head, essentially because my research assistant to my left-hand side, who knows you a heck of a lot better than I do, has given me some pointers.
These are right.
Yeah. I won't tell him half of the stuff I'm not supposed to say, Jack. Am I correct in saying this? You are the youngest person to do a show garden?
Yes. I think I was at Chelsea in 2013, and I was 20 years old, and I got a Silver Guild medal.
You did them earlier than that, I seem to remember.
I did them earlier than that. I was 14 when I was at the Morven Spring Show, which is from my first garden. I was so young that I wasn't actually allowed to be on site, really, to build it, because of the health and safety thing. And then my first show garden at Hampton Court, yeah, I was 16, which was, I had a quite a big garden called Desert's Delight. So I've been, you know, I've done a few gardens, really.
Okay, there's a couple of things. I'm gone now between the Chelsea and the Malvern thing, but I was born into one of eight children. When you decided, well, in the case of the Sod Show, there exists no garden radio show, and I can sit there and say, well, you know, boo-hoo, what does Peter do? There's nowhere for me to go. There's nowhere for me to tell that story. Or I can turn around and say, well, I think I'll start my own. We hear all of the arguments, I say arguments, people saying maybe into the Twitter sphere or via press release that young people in horticulture and how we draw them into X, and then all of a sudden I present the portfolio of Jack Dunkley and you say, well, yeah, well, okay, well, everybody apart from him. Do you see these cases or not arguments or disagreements, but these points being made and turn around and say, well, listen, lads, this is a bit of claptrap?
I think it is a hard thing, just because of the nature of what we do. But until they actually get into it and understand how amazing the industry is, how exciting it is, and just the ability to be able to, you know, draw something and then watch it come to life, it's like any design, really.
Right, sorry, Jack, I was waiting for you to say something else. But whilst you are listening at home, I should add, it's a little bit ambient, can I say that, on Jack's telephone line. I can't really do anything about that because we are in the off-seasons. It's raining and there's a little bit of wind and there's all of those things that you should maybe expect with a garden podcast, albeit we are not in... I don't know. We don't exactly host Gardener's Question Time, do we, Andrew?
Not really, no.
No, not really. So, but we're still delighted to have Jack on the line, and we hope you are too, and please do bear with us. Jack, if you were to give a little bit of advice then to the generation, that young generation that's coming up, those graduates who are coming through, LCGD, for example, and they're saying, well, how do I get to a show? Can you give, on one hand, for those listening at home, the steps that you need to go through to put a show garden into either a Malvern, a Hampton, or a Chelsea, and B, how easy or not easy is that process?
Obviously, the first thing is to come up with a concept and an idea. And then once you've kind of formulated your design, then it's kind of finding someone to work with and getting actually a sponsor. Because some of these gardens, they cost so much money to actually put them together. So you really need, you know, financial backing behind you. And then once you've got that, it's bringing the ingredients together with the hard landscaping stuff, sorting materials, finding the plants, and then kind of watching your vision come together, if that makes sense.
But a lot of people would take it the opposite way, Jack, if you will allow me to have this conversation with you, and that is that, well, okay, I bumped into Jimmy and he owns a shop that sells, for example, antiques. He's now stipulated a brief and he's also turned around and said, well, I've got 10, 300 or 30,000 and you are now the opposite way around. And when you're a first-time designer heading towards that gateway, that entranceway into show gardening, sometimes it's not ideally what you want to take, but you take it nonetheless.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. And obviously, when I first did my first garden at Malvern, I think I managed to build the whole thing for about £7,000 or £8,000, which isn't a lot of money when it comes to, you know, building gardens. But, you know, you have to start somewhere. Everyone's got to start somewhere.
There's that thing about being noticed, isn't it? You know, that you do have to start somewhere, and you can do it on a budget. And I suspect, from what I remember of your gardens, you catched a few plants, and you know, but you also grew some of your own plants as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that's a really good way to save money, is to actually grow stuff from, you know, plug and liner, especially perennials, if you've got the time. And there's nothing better than putting your own plants into your garden. Because plants can be very expensive. Especially to create that kind of show garden look and feel, you need, you know, quite considerably a large quantity of plants coming through, especially ones in flower. And you normally have to grow, you know, quite a few more than you need. So
have you got any plans? It's windy there, isn't it, wherever it is?
Not at the moment, no. I mean, I'm just concentrating on private design work at the moment. And then maybe sort of get back into doing another show sort of in a couple of years' time. I'm doing Grand Designs Live. I mean, that's the only show that I've committed to at the moment. And that works quite well for me as a designer.
Is that because you wanted to do something just a little bit different, Jack? And again, I should add, for those of you listening at home, myself and Andrew have spent a bit of time together over the last few days, really, and part of what we were saying was, again, that where some designers, it's horses for courses, really, and there's nothing at all wrong with either. It's just the routes that some people take. And so some will invariably, like a Joe Thompson, will pretty much do 80% a Chelsea, whereas I tend to do things that will make me smile a little bit more, which isn't necessarily that path that would better evolve my career. Does that tie in with Jack? Is that maybe a little bit what you're about now?
I like doing Grand Designs Live because you get a lot of clients there who they've got their plans in their hands in terms of what they want to do with the house. Majority of them all need someone to talk to in terms of, you know, garden design or, you know, doing something with the space around the house. And they're all in the right kind of mindset, and you tend to get more of a younger audience. I've had a lot of sort of London-based rooftop jobs from there, because you can see exciting lighting, you can see exciting products that also go in the garden there. It's just a really nice show. It's quite a long show. It's a 10-day show, but it doesn't actually involve me building a physical garden. I kind of basically turn up and have a bit more of a trade stand, really.
So I like how you sort of talk about these younger clients, because you're probably younger than these clients, aren't you, yourself? And, you know, what I suppose the question I've asked you whenever I meet you is, like, you know, what's that secret of what you're doing at the moment? Because you did start at 14 years old, and you're not that much older, but you've got a very successful business, and I think you've got a really good business head on you. Where did that come from? Is that just come naturally, or is it, you know, influenced by somebody?
That's a good question. I mean, I was very fortunate enough to, from when I was about 17, I was introduced to Lord Saatchi, and almost kind of worked on his property for a few years, and kind of was guided by him in terms of things like my branding and my kind of sort of business acumen. And he's, you know, been a bit of a mentor to me, really. And obviously, my dad works very closely with me as well, and he, you know, helps me with more of the sort of the financial accounting side of things. So. But I think I'm passionate with what I'm selling. So it doesn't come across as I'm trying to sell myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm passionate about helping people to build their gardens and make their gardens look lovely. Every new client is exciting. And kind of seeing their face when you show them the plans, and they go, oh, wow, I didn't believe you could do so much in a small space, sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's a really nice feeling. Clients are like that.
Jack, I just want to talk to you briefly about rooftop gardens, because in this mini series of episodes that myself and Andrew have done hosted together, it's the second or third time within the space of the five that rooftop gardens have been mentioned. And for some, I'm going to jest in saying this, but it could be that there was grey paving slabs, let's say, put down, usually a pebble around the outside of it, because it hides the trimmings on the tail end of the plaster work, which may not have been finished entirely correctly. And then maybe there's a deck laid on top of that, and then maybe there's fake grass laid on top of that. And that is not what you're about, Jack, just to put that in context. How, to bring it to a logic level, how avant-garde or how different or how special can that be? And just roughly £1 or a million, what kind of spend are you looking on a rooftop garden and on an average size of rooftop garden? Does that question make sense?
I'm working on a project in Hammersmith at the moment. And what we're doing is we're putting in some very cool lighting. A lot of these rooftop gardens are quite exposed. I mean, this one's, you know, quite high up, 10 stories up. So planting has to be very, very tough. And a lot of these kind of clients, it's not their first home, it's their second home. So it's all about low maintenance. And it's all about kind of having something that's visually stunning that they don't really need to spend any time to look after. You know, so we put, you know, automated irrigation systems in. We put, you know, really cool lighting that they can control on an app on their phone. Find some really cool furniture and some planters. And it's just about softening the space outside and kind of bringing the outside sort of area into their, you know, their apartment.
Jack, when I spoke to Butter Wakefield, she'd done the Gaze Burville display at Chelsea in 2018, in fact it was. I remember saying to Butter, you know, how much is this piece of furniture that we're sitting on? And it was really nice. But I think she said one of the chairs, not two of them, Jack, one of them was 18,000.
Wow, that's a lot for a chair.
Well, that's exactly what I said, Jack. But then my head is also saying, well, if we put that on your rooftop garden, well, all of a sudden we're heading towards almost six figures, irrespective of what the size is, assuming we put in the sexy kind of lighting. Are you on a 50 grand upwards kind of a scale when you hit rooftop gardening, just by sole virtue of the fact that it's everything up through the elevators in some cases, or up over the balcony by winch or by crane?
I mean, that obviously adds, you know, significant cost to it. What you don't have is you don't have lots of mud, for example. So, you know, you can work pretty much all through the year, unless you're obviously doing electrics and it's, you know, pouring rain. I mean, the gardens that I'm working on, you know, from 20 grand up to about 40 maximum, really. You know, any more than that, and it's not really worth that investment.
Oh, sorry, these are quite small spaces as well, so you're often just talking about two chairs and really not £18,000 a time and things. But, you know, and things, that longevity, I was out with students just 2 weeks ago and we were looking up and I saw a balcony I'd done a long, long time ago, but the planters are still there and they're still looking good and they've been replanted and things. And I think you don't need a lot in those spaces really to improve things.
No, absolutely right. And just one feature tree or one feature plant can make a big difference to a space like that.
Jack, I tend to see, inverted commas, rooftop gardens. I'll call them more rooftop spaces in this case here. And I appreciate that you're saying it's exposed, that it's a small enough space that there's an immediate stipulation of reduced maintenance heading towards zero maintenance. When you hit that design brief for the planting, invariably what I will see, not in all cases, for the greater part, it's usually something along the lines of Buxus sempervirens and there might be a pine tree or tree in a nutshell. Have you gone outside of that brief on a smaller percentage maybe where it's a little bit still low maintenance, but Peter, wait and I'll tell you what we've got to do with this one here.
So one of the sort of rooftops, I was using a lot of kind of yuccas in it and things like that, things that are, you know, look structurally beautiful, especially when you light them up. But also you can tolerate the cold temperatures and the wind. And I think it's just, you have to be quite simple with them as well. I mean, I'm trying to step away from, you know, box at the moment because of all the blight thing. But, you know, you can get some really nice Euonymus as well that creates a similar sort of effect that's very, very clean lined. And then just try and bring a bit of colour, you know, all round colour, because they can look quite bleak. So, especially in the winter. So if you've got some, you know, nice evergreens, bringing some colour through, and that can make a big difference.
What's the most difficult one you've ever worked on, Jack? And again, I'll back this up by saying there was one on the north side of Dublin that I did, and the reason I got the job was because, well, in short, nobody else would take it. There was no access into the back for any machinery, so essentially everything had to be brought up by winch. And I say winch, it was actually me and another man holding onto a length of rope with everything in a one-ton bag. Now, once we got it up onto the balcony, we were absolutely A-OK, but it did restrict, in some cases, large trees of extreme weight because it was just physically impossible to get them up there in any way whatsoever, unless we brought in a crane for $35,000 a day, which then would have put us entirely over budget.
Mm. I've had some quite tricky projects, but especially you do have to think about the elevator, for example. You know, what weight, well, or what size pot you can have, or what size tree. And it's things like you want to do as little hard landscaping as possible. Everything wants to be kind of almost brought in, already manufactured and ready to go sort of thing. So, yeah, some of the projects are challenging, but you have to overcome each one. Everyone is unique and everyone's different. So it just depends what you're doing and where you are, really. But I would somewhat prefer rooftops to, you know, some gardens where it's the winter and you've got diggers on it and it's awfully muddy and you just feel like you're going nowhere in terms of the build. But at least with those, you can kind of knock them out quite quickly all through the year.
Talking about these roof gardens, though, but are you also getting lots of sort of small city gardens as well? I know you're sort of based outside of London, but it sounds to me if you're going to go somewhere like Grand Designs, you're going to pick up a lot of new gardens. But we all know that most new developments come with small gardens. Is that something that you're finding a lot of?
Yeah, I've got a couple of. I've actually got to go to a meeting in Charlton tomorrow for a small kind of urban-y style garden, you know, only 15 metres by, I don't know, about 8 metres wide, something like that, so not massive space, but again, it's all about screening off overlooking windows, and maximising the space, because it's not the biggest area of garden, but, you know, they're going to want certain features, they want seating areas, they're going to want perhaps sort of outdoor dining, and then softening all the boundaries as well. I tend to find if you go for something that's a, you know, quite a light colour, it makes the garden feel much bigger, contrasting planting against it. So
I like your definition of a small garden, because my garden's half that size. When I think of small garden, I think of like 4x4 or something like that. Are you still doing lots of work out in the countryside as well? Are you obviously getting larger gardens as well?
I've just finished one up in Cambridge that's going to be hopefully start building next year. I've done one in Reading, so that's about an acre job. So that's kind of the biggest project I've got on at the moment.
So you spread your wings quite far. What about overseas? Are you looking to do that in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I have actually done the project. I did a design for someone in Dubai a couple of years ago, actually, but it never really came to anything. But I would like to do more abroad. I've kind of gone from tackling my sort of local area to tackling the whole of the country now. And then that's my sort of next step. You know, if I can't find any more work here, that is, I go abroad.
You're in an unusual situation in contrast to most guests who've been on the Sud Show, in that you've done a certain amount of show gardening already by the point that you were 22. Apologies, because I don't want to make this like when we were talking to Richard from Q, and we spent a little bit of time talking about children's, albeit it was 1 hectare, but it was also a little bit overdwelling, maybe, I say, maybe, but on children's gardening nonetheless. And equally in Jack's case, it's ended up a little bit, but just speaking about rooftop gardens, Jack, but because you've got so much in your arsenal already, is it a case of that the next time you do a show garden, it'll be, well, Peter, I'm going to do something that is, you know, an Elton John or a David Bowie or a Ziggy Stardust, essentially, because it's something that I've never done before and I don't want to be labelled as that person who does just that. Are you conscious of that? Do you try and do something always a little bit different because of that?
Yeah, I think the Bermuda Triangle that I did was a small example of that. I think it's good to be different, and I think it's good to have that kind of, to be young and have that energy in the industry and kind of push the boundaries and push technology. That's what design's all about. It's about trying to, you know, make something better or make something different or make something that looks, you know, completely different. So it is about pushing those boundaries.
Were you careful about that name, Jack? And not maybe when you were 14 years of age, not to be disrespectful in any way to that, but when you got a little bit older, I say, did you then start to say, well, hold on a second, this is my career path, my chosen career path, I'm not going to deviate from this, all roads lead to X, this is where I'm going to go, and if that involves doing that show on that career path, then that's the road I'm taking. So when you do the something different, you almost need to be a little bit careful.
Yeah, I think obviously when you start out doing these things, you know everything's new to you, so everything is different, everything is a challenge, everything, you're learning about everything. But it's once you've done a few and you've got a few sort of behind you, you can kind of sit and look back at what you've done and then take all the positives from each one and then try and sort of build something based on that. But you want to sort of create something that's a bit of a wow factor, I think. I like to see myself as being slightly, you know, a different designer. It doesn't follow other designers necessarily.
Are there gardens that you've maybe turned down, Jack, that you wouldn't take on?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few, but only just because of perhaps location or the size of them or the budget. You know, I think you need to just stick to a few projects, not take on too much. You know, I have made that mistake of taking on too much work. And actually, you kind of run yourself into the ground, really. And you get stressed. And then as soon as you get stressed about doing what you love, then it takes the fun out of it, sort of thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. It's easy to think that you've got to take over the world, isn't it? But you're taking over the world slowly. It sounds like he's going.
But that's what you do when you're young, I think. I think when you're young, you're a bit almost like a rabbit in the headlights. You're like, oh, I'll take that job on. And you kind of have to do it to learn which jobs are worth taking on and which ones weren't.
Well, I'm interested in it. Are you still growing your own plants and things? Do you still go back and do that? Because obviously that's where your first passion came from, you know, with plants. And we talk to lots of people. That's their background. So are you still doing it?
Not as much as I was. Not as much as I was. I've still got a few bits going on, but nothing anywhere near like what I had before. But that's because my time has just gone from, doing that to now just full-time design work. Now I've got to be knocking out so many designs, especially with, 3D renders and CGIs that take the time. And I'm quite passionate about doing them myself and not, passing them on to someone else to do. Just because I want to be, as the technology improves, I want to be on top of it.
I mean, you've talked about the lighting and stuff like that. I mean, you're obviously quite up with this. Is there anything you can see in the future that you think will enhance your design practice and things that the rest of us should be keeping an eye on?
I think all the clients are after is sort of, they want it to be easy. So anything that can make, having a garden look amazing, easy, even if it is the simplicity of having an app that can control all your irrigation, all your lighting from one place. They want it to be easy. And I'm sure there's going to be things coming through that sort of make it even better. Even down to the materials, in the last, few years, we've seen, a massive amount of porcelain being used because it's low maintenance, because it's easy to wash, the dirt doesn't go into it, you don't have to seal it. So there will be products coming through, I think.
Do you spend a lot of time going to shows, Jack? I know the landscape show was on this year, myself and Andrew spoke at it, but even seeing the products, the wall cladding products, the instant install kitchens, for example, that were there, do you give that a lot of time, or is it a case of, no, Peter, look, I'm too busy, I know everything, I'm extremely good looking, and by the way, my new album is out next week on iTunes.
obviously it's great to go to shows because you always pick up new things. I haven't been to one for a little while, but I think Futurescapes on today, so I might see whether I can get down to it.
Futurescapes is not on today, Jack, because we're recording this in the future. No.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, we're in 2019, right. Jack.
Oh, right, okay then.
Yeah, we won't edit this bit out, but thanks. but on that note, though, Jack, there was a point where I didn't go to a trade show for about 3 years, and some people would say that to me, that it's good to just let it go. I liked the landscape show, and because I think Andrew did it, I have to give credit, there was a very good job done on bringing in the likes of Naomi Ferrett Cohen and Will Williams, again some of them former guests of the show, Kate Goulds, that I wouldn't normally get to hear speaking, but also they did, and because of the talks and that they were fresh and they were new and they were a little bit different and they weren't always the same voices that are on the list, that is in part the reason why I kind of went, yeah, I'll put my name, or I'll, if I'm allowed to say it, I'll allow you to put my name on that list, if that's all right. Did make me want to go back because that keeps changing. I'll bite some of the stands, maybe repeat customers for the likes of the Landscape Show, or in this case, Futurescapes.
But we also have to remember that, you know, not everything's new anyway. So, I mean, I go to these places because the 5% is new and I'll pick up something that's interesting. Landscape Show's good example of that. Every year I end up putting an order into somebody new that I've met there. You know, it is what it is, and you just have to keep going along, and sometimes you might be disappointed, and other times you'll find something really new and exciting, like 3D printing.
I'll give you a funny one, Jack. When I was there, I got talking to one of the Dutch growers, Job Holland, I think it was. They were the bulb growers, and he was talking to me, and I said, well, funnily enough, in the last 3 years, I've planted more bulbs than I have in the last 10 years in business as Donegan Landscape. And have you found a couple of things like that that are starting to come back into vogue or into fashion?
That's a good question, actually. Not recently, I don't think. I think for me, because I'm always looking ahead rather than looking behind, you know, I wouldn't... it's like the debate of, you know, having a load of you know, small miniature conifers back in the garden. I mean, for me, that's a complete turn off in terms of design. And I'm sure at some point there'll be a fashion where they come back in. But it's not something that I'm going to use, if that makes sense.
Well, hopefully not, Jack, and I'm in full agreement with you. But then we also had Graham on the show there a couple of weeks ago, and that's all he does. So I didn't agree with him either on that one. So, but yeah, no, I hear what
but
you're
saying. But you understand what I'm saying, yeah.
No, I do. And it's been 25 years since I put anything conifer and headers together, and I'm very happy to leave it next to the Cliff Richard vinyl in the compost heap. It's absolutely fine there, Jack. But when alliums or wildflower bulbs or wild bulbs mixes replace wildflower matting, then I'm quite happy to see that come back into vogue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, sure. Sure.
Okay.
But I think some things that we're going to learn more about, I mean, for things like green walls, for example, you know, they look stunning when you first put them in, but, you know, people don't really quite realise how much maintenance is involved in them. You know, how many times you have to keep going and feeding them and pruning them and tidying them up to make them look stunning. And, you know, if you wanted a green wall that's low maintenance, well, there isn't really one.
It's called an ivy, Jack. That's what it is. It's called an ivy, and you put it on a little bit of steel wire. Or moss, indeed, Jack. Yeah. Okay, look, for those of you listening at home, we are on the verge, of heading into another episode of What Grinds Peter and Andrew's Gears, and I'm not saying green walls are up there, but there's a lot to be said for clematis, but that's also heading back to the 80s as well. My huge thanks to Jack Dunkley, who our guest today, also to Adrian Carty, who's been on sound, Andrew Fisher-Tomlin and the crew at London College of Garden Design, who've made this one possible, and to you listening at home. Been a little bit windy, but I hope it's been okay. He's outside, it's a garden podcast, and yeah, I hope we're doing all right. Well, thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
No, pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And thanks to you at home. Have a great weekend, I was about to say, or a great week, depending on what day you're listening to this. Take care. Bye-bye. See you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.